Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
My name is Stanley Premnath, and I live in Valley Stream, Long Island, in New York, outside of the city. My background, for the past 40 years, I work for a Japanese investment bank, but by profession, I'm a school teacher. I started teaching high school at age 16 plus in British Guyana, and I had to leave that job because the children and I were the same age in high school. I was a threat to the boys and I was a friend to the girls. So I decided that no, this is not going to work. I came to America and I got a job at a bank, and I spent most of my adult years living in America here working for a Japanese bank. I'm also a credentialed officer with the Assemblies of God, which means I'm a pastor. So on a given Sunday, I'm asked to preach. I preach my heart out. I travel. I tell God's deliverance message. In addition to that, I'm married. I'm fully retired from a secular job. We have two daughters. Both of them are married. Stephanie was 8 and a half during the 9/11 era. Caitlin was 4. So Stephanie is married to Ryan. They have 2 children. So we have 2 grandchildren, Hannah and Ezra. And Caitlin got married just last month. Her husband is Dwayne. So we're the modern couple. Jenny goes to work. I'm retired. I stay home and cook. And that's the story of my life.
I love it. And it's good that family's multiplying. It's so good to hear. And can we just jump right in to your recollection, December 11, 2000?
Tell me where you want me to start, and here I go.
Just let's go from the morning, like arriving to work, and then just jump right into your story.
All right. So September 11, beautiful day. I think it was a Tuesday. Nice, bright, sunny, nothing indifferent. The morning before I went to work, I'm telling Jenny, we had a little house in Elmont. We now live in Valley Stream, which is just like a mile apart from where we used to live. I'm praying in my heart, the same prayer I carried over and over and over. I'm praying, Lord, cover me and my loved ones under your precious blood. Take us to work. Bring us back home in peace and safety. And she's telling me she is having a bad hair day. Whatever that means, after 37 years of marriage, I still can't figure a bad hair day. I told her, look, I'm going to wear my lucky shoes. She says, Stan, that's an ugly pair of shoe. And that's the only thing I ever bought. Thank God I wore that shoe, or I would not have been able to walk properly today. So, took the car, drove to the borough of Queens, parked up in the streets, took the A train, the letter A train, commuted to Lower Manhattan, about an hour and a half, traffic and all. So on a given day, I would commute, let's say, 3 miles. I worked for a company they called Fuji Bank Limited. We had occupied 4 floors of the second tower, the south tower, that is, the 78th to the 82nd floor. I work on the 81st floor on the south side of the building. So I stop at the same Raisin Bagel store, and Raisin Bagel toasted, cup of coffee, pushes the button in the elevator, and zoomed up to the 78th floor, the sky lobby. Walk across the hallway, took the local elevator. I'm now on the 81st floor. Walk all the way down on my right, and then I would have been on the south side of the building. Walk into the office, huge glass enclosed office. It wasn't a private office. Some other people shared it with me. A young lady is making copies of the copier. Stan, how you doing? I'm special, thank you. I know you're special, Stan. See, my pastor used to tell us, in New York City, you're so busy, somebody asks you how you're doing. Before you answer, they're gone. And you tell them you're special, they turn back and give you a look and ask you sometimes, what makes you special? You tell them you're a child of God. They would smile and you're gone. And he said, you just made somebody's day. So Delise and I exchanged pleasantry because of a consolidation we had with 2 other large Japanese bank. I had 2 desks. This is where my phone is, and about 6 feet away, that's where I'll be sitting. And part of our office was relocated in the North Tower. Somewhere coming up in that elevator, the first building was hit, and I didn't have a clue. The building is soundproof, so I did not know what happened. The lease was making copies of the copier. She did not hear of the impact. My phone rang. I picked it up. Stan, how you doing? I'm fine, thank you. That's my mother. I'm like, this is strange. Didn't ask me anything else. How you doing? Are you okay? Yeah. And my brothers, Steve, Paul, Bill, asks the same question. They took turns calling me and asking me. And I'm saying to myself, well, gosh, it's not even 9 o'clock. And these people, they really miss me or they love me. So I hung up the phone. I'm walking towards where my desk is now. And as I'm walking, where I sat, I could have seen an angle to the North Tower. On my right hand, I could have seen part of the Brooklyn Bridge. And if I swivel around a little, I can see the Statue of Liberty and Jersey City overlooking the Hudson. Spectacular view. So I saw like fireballs, chunks of fireballs falling from the sky because the first plane was hit, the first building was hit way on top. So I walked towards the huge glass panes and I'm looking up. I'm like, gosh, what is happening? So I call out to Delise, come, 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 let's take a look. So she's watching. She says, God, Stan, I'm scared. So I walk back, pick up my phone. I'm dialing my boss, Peter Del Grasso. Pete's on, pick up. No response. I'm calling now his boss, Bob Militaglio. Bobby, pick up. No response. I hung up the phone and said, Delise, we got to get out of here. Ran out the office, back on the hallway, all the way to the north side. Got there, pushes the button. We're in the elevator. We went down back to the 78th floor, the Sky Lobby. Where are we going to take the elevator to go all the way down? 78th floor, multiple elevators, crowded lobby, hundreds of people. This was a massive building. One floor was like 1 acre square. The doors open up right in front of me. 17 other people from our offices, Delise and I, we're standing there, got in that elevator. Door closes, not a word is said, we hit the ground. The doors open up, I stepped out. Where are you going? Security guard said, I'm going home. I saw fireballs falling from that building. Your building is safe, is secure, go back to your office. What do you do? So I'm standing outside of the elevator. The doors are about to close. Manny Gomez is leaning on one side. Jack Andriacchio is leaning on the other side of the door, trying to prevent from closing. Come on, Stan, the man. We don't have all day here, somebody from the elevator said. Come on, Stan. You're not scared to go back up. And I'm still not certain what I should be scared of. If somebody had told me the first building was hit by a plane, I would have been out of there. And the intercom, you can hear it. Your building is safe, is secure. Go back to your office. Delise stepped out of the office, the elevator, and said, Stan, I want to go home. All right, take the rest of the day off. Go. Stan, how can you do that? We have a business here to run. No. I'm running the operation. She's going home. I never spoke to my bosses like that. So everybody was like, whoa, Stan. And that was probably the best decision I ever made. The young lady is walking away, and as she's walking away, she's turning back, looking at me. Are you sure? Go, 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 go. And she's gone. Come on, Stan. We don't have all day here. We have an operation here to run. And half-heartedly, I'm stepping back into that elevator. Still hearing the sound, your building is safe, is secured. Go back to your office. And I'm reliving very briefly 1993, February 26, when the truck bombed the World Trade Center. White pickup truck, 1,200 pounds of explosive. The man walks away, presses the remote control, boom. I remember I was on the 79th floor of the North Tower. I was having lunch with my supervisor at the time. We were sitting across the table from each other, and the bomb exploded. Boom. The building shook. The lights flickered, the place went dark, and the smoke rose from the vents within seconds. And all hell broke loose. And she starts to scream, we're gonna die, Stan. How can you sit there and eat at a time like this? Just lady, if I'm going to the Lord today, I'm going with a full stomach. That's what I said. And I said, snap out. What you didn't see on TV was everybody was told to drop, roll, go to lower floors. We were evacuated to higher floors. So we found ourselves on the 84th floor. And I got home 2 o'clock the next morning. So my wife thought I died. So I relived that entire episode within those brief seconds. And I walked back in that elevator and the door closed. And I can still remember the smile and the faces of all these people who I would never see again. I still remember Alicia Levin looking at me, smiling. I remember I reached to Kawauchi and he had his sweater tucked in his pants and I yanked it out and I says, "Come on, man, it's a warm day." And I remember somebody said, "Only Stan can do that." The people in that elevator were more friends to me than employer employee. And looking back in retrospect, I never thought I would ever see these people again. Never knew that they were going to die. Still remember the smile on everybody's faces, and we were zoomed back up. We stopped on the 78th floor, and one man got out in front of me. The man was out of a job for a long time, and my boss's boss took compassion on his family and hired him as a consultant. And the man was going back to get his laptop. He got out on the 81st floor in front of me and he walks into the men's room and I never saw the man again. What do you tell this wife and this child who called, "Did you see my dad?" And I lived with that survival guilt for a long time. I walk all the way back and I walked into the office and the phone rang again. Picked up the phone and this is what I heard. "Get out." "Get out for what?" "Stan, you're not logged on. You're not watching the monitor. Please, we don't have time. A young lady from Chicago is calling me, one of her rep offices. Because of the time difference, 1 hour behind, she is watching the news. She knows what is happening. She's at home telling me to get out. No, I'm a logical-minded person. You tell me why, and I will go. Stan, we do not have time. Please get out." I'm standing up with a phone in my hand and she's screaming, "Get out, get out, get out." And I'm watching in no particular direction, still with the phone in my hand. And I'm looking towards the direction of the Statue of Liberty. What I saw froze me in my spot, kind of hypnotized and mesmerized all in one word. I was kind of glued to the floor. Because I'm watching a giant gray plane with you in the tail, and the plane is bearing down towards me, eye level, eye contact. On a normal day, a plane would zoom by half a mile away, and it's normal, but looking at a plane coming towards you is a different feeling. You don't know how to react, you don't know what to do, you're just standing there in awe, watching. And I can still hear that revving sound that the engine is making as the plane is getting closer, closer, and closer by the split second. And all I remember doing, and I don't know why I did what I am about to say I did, I dropped the phone and I screamed, "Lord, I can't do this. You take over." And it looks as if the Lord heard that cry, that petition. And that plane just deflected a little from me, and I dove under the desk, and the plane just hit into the building. Upon impact, it looked like a demolition crew came and just ripped the entire place apart. Every wall was flattened, every piece of furniture was mangled and broken up. It looks like matchboxes and matchsticks. A large chunk of the plane broke out and was stuck in my office doorway, 20 feet from where I am. The floor above me collapsed and is hovering like this. I'm gonna die one way or the other. And all the cables that are hanging in the ceiling just drop and they're short-circuiting. The sprinkler system came on. And what you didn't see on TV was all these glass panes that surrounds the building, they were popped, and the air pressure was so great it was sucking everything out. And I'm holding on to these mangled pieces of furniture. But the only desk that stood firm was the desk that I'm hiding under. My Bible was on top of that desk. What is that chance? And I'm screaming, Lord, I don't want to die. Please, Lord, send somebody, anybody to help me. And the first scream I screamed, somebody at the other end of the floor had a flashlight and was shining it all around and over his head. I can see the light from way on top. What is that chance? I'm telling myself, this is not real. And I'm saying to myself, these people had to be heartless here to leave me to die. Why would they leave me to die? This time, every person who came up in that elevator with me was gone. Every person who was within the four floors that we had at the job at the time, they were all gone. I was left by myself. Wait for me, I don't want to die. Wait for me, I'm screaming. And I start to crawl. I crawl the entire length of the loans department to the lounge, in the computer room, in the communication room, and one dry wall stood firm, blocking me from going towards the light walls where the person had the light. And I always ask that question, Lord, if you wanted me to die, why did you bring me all the way here to leave me? Why that one wall? Why, Lord? When I got closer to the wall, I can hear faint, because I was temporarily deaf because of the sound. And the man behind the wall is saying, bang on the wall, I'll know where you are. So I'm hitting the wall. And the man said, I can hear you now, climb over. It's a dry wall, like a sheetrock wall. I can't do it. You got to think about your family. You got to climb over, I'll catch you on the other side, or you will die. 10 feet sheetrock wall, hollow ceiling, part of the hanging loose materials were there. So I tried to jump first, grab on at the top, and I missed. And part of the hanging loose sheetrock just caved in, and trying to prevent it from hitting my face, I raised up my hand. And a black sheetrock screw that was attached to a piece of wood just went straight through my palm. Oh my God. The man said, what happened? I said, a nail went through my palm. Bite it out and try again. I can't do it. Is it attached to a piece of wood? Yes. Hit the wood and the nail's gonna come out. I hit the wood, the nail came out. I'm in worse shape than before. And I start crying out to this invisible God that I've heard so much about. Lord, why did you bring me here to leave me to die? What is gonna befall Jenny? Who's gonna walk Caitlin down the aisle when she gets married? Who's going to walk Stephanie down the aisle when she's getting married? How is Jenny going to be able to take care of all the bills that we have? Who's going to be there to comfort her and take care of these children? And I'm crying out to this invisible God that I've heard so much about. Lord, I don't want to die. And the man behind the wall is hearing this conversation that I'm having. You're crazy, you're going to die. And you could hear the flames are just licking up the office space and this and crouching closer, closer. And I can't breathe. You gotta climb over the wall. I can't do it. And at that point, all I can hear was Pastor Jim preaching his heart out, and he was saying the same thing over and over and over. And this is what he's saying. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's all I can hear in my head. And I don't know why. All I remember doing was I took my hands and I'm caressing this wall. I'm caressing this wall. This hand had just ballooned after I hit the wood and the nail came out. And I don't know why I'm caressing this wall, but all I can hear, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I made a fist as tightly as I could. And I don't know why. All I remember, I punched with such force that my fist went straight through this drywall, sheetrock wall. The man grabbed my fist. He said, I see your hand. I said, when you see my hand, yank my body through. I punched. The hole got bigger, 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 bigger. I stuck my head and he gave me one headlock with a fluid motion. And he pulled with such force, and I squirmed and I flew over on the other side. I knocked him off his feet and we rolled down 10 flights of stairs. And we landed on the 88th floor. I was on top of this fella when we stopped rolling down the stairs. And I don't know how to thank this man who just saved my life. All I remember was I hugged him tightly around the neck and gave him a kiss on the cheek. I says, "Thank you." And the guy says, "What are you doing?" Got up, he fixed his jacket, his tie, and he says, "Brian Clark," like a robot. And I says, "Stanley Praimnath." But this guy did an act of kindness, and he said something that I'll go to the grave remembering. Normally, when somebody shakes your hand, they will let go, but he held on to the hand. The hand was lacerated, swollen, and was bleeding. And he took his left index finger very gently and he started to rub this wound. And he stared me in the eyes, and he said something, and this is what he said. "All my life, I lived as an only child. I was born and raised in Canada. I always wanted a brother. And I find that person today." And he took his left palm that was beating my right hand and he did like this. He says, "From today, you're my blood brother." And he put his hand around my shoulder and he says, "Come on, buddy, let's go home." And we started that long journey home. You had to walk 10 flights of stairs, turn on a landing 10 flights, then you cover one floor. We have 79, 80 floors more to go. As we were going down, the water was cascading down the stairwells, and you can see the flames are just licking up the office space. And I'm telling this man, "It is going." "Stan, what is going?" And I don't know what to say. All I'm mumbling, "It's going, it's going." That's all I can remember. He said, "What do you see burning there is all draperies and cosmetic and paper. My profession, I'm an engineer, and steel don't bend. We have to hurry." And he had his hand around my shoulder, and I held on to the left side of the rail, and we're hobbling. I had a large leg wound that was opening up. I had taken off my shirt, make a makeshift bandage, tied it up on my leg. And we reached somewhere in the 40-something floor, 45th floor, I think. And I couldn't breathe. And I was in the best shape of my life. I remember the man put his hand in the door. There was no heat coming out. He opens the door and he stepped in. And he reached for somebody's phone. There was nobody in the office space. And he picked up the phone and he's calling somebody. And later on, he told me that was his wife, Diane. But I can hear the conversation. He's saying, "I have this fella here from Fuji Bank. He's in bad shape. I'm bringing him out." I tried calling Jenny. The first plane had hit the first building. They were in the office. They're watching the episode. Their building was hidden over the Brooklyn Bridge. And the second plane hit the building, and in our heart, I was a goner. I spoke to her supervisor, Louise, and I said, "If you get in contact with Jenny, you tell her that I'm coming home to you girls." And something caught my attention. There's a man lying down with a broken back, closely shaved head, and blood and bubbles are oozing out of his head. And all he's saying over and over, "Please tell my wife and our baby that I love them. We just got married." And an African American security guard stood up who could have escaped but chose to stay. No help came, and they both perished. We were not just covered by the same blood, we were covered by the same ash. So we didn't look indifferent from each other. But talk about love, going the extra mile, staying to the end with somebody and giving your life for that person. So Brian and I continued to walk down the stairs. When we got down, Towards the end, we met a guy who was coming back up. He had a walkie-talkie in his hand, and Brian introduced him to me as Jose, and Jose was going to help somebody up. You see, after the first plane had hit the first building, nobody thought anybody was there. So when we reached the ground floor, the men and women in uniform, they were shocked. And we were telling them there were other people trapped up there. What you didn't hear or didn't know was that after the 93 bombing, they had nailed shut the door that leads to the roof. And I was a fire warden for my floor, but I was never told. So chances are those people who try to make it up there to be airlifted up realized that the door was locked, nailed shut, didn't have time to make it back down, and they perish. Brian later told me that he was coming down with a group of six other people. And when they heard the scream, the rest of them took the option of going back up. He stayed to investigate, and that's how he lived. So when we reached the ground floor, the only people we saw were the men and women in uniform, and they were belching orders, "Run, run, run, go to Liberty." Liberty Street, that is. Liberty was just a street then. Today, Liberty is total freedom. I didn't know where to go, but Brian is navigating. And he grabbed onto my hand, and we're running, and he is tearing basically. And these good men and women, they're running back up the stairs, and you can hear the scream. And we had a choice of stopping and investigating, and they were taking the hit. They were saving us by sending us to safety, and they were taking the hit. These were the heroes, not me. We ran out that building, and the building is swaying and it's crumbling, and we're jumping over fallen debris and burning piece of logs, jumping over somebody, and we're running, and I saw this guy standing up like this, a Catholic priest. And I nearly knocked the man over. And the man said, "Oh my God, what happened?" I said, "I just came out of that building. That's all I remember." And the man said, "You need prayer badly, and you need the hospital." And Brian says, "Stan, do you remember anything? You are babbling in a language we don't understand." And I'm not bilingual. And the next thing I remember, I had told Brian that I'm going to Trinity Church, and I don't know why. We are holding on to the fence of the Trinity Church, the backside of the church on the fence. So we are holding on to the fence. In front of us is the Trinity Church, and in front of that is the World Trade Center. And we are watching this episode as a clip from a movie, a horror movie. And I'm telling Brian, it's going. "Stan, you got to snap out. You're in shock." And the next thing I know, the building starts to sway. It's going so much with, on the one side, I'm like, "Oh my God, oh my God, he was going to tilt over." And I'm swaying with the building. "Oh my God, oh my God." Then it stopped. Then it starts swaying on the other side. "Oh my God, oh my God, he's going to tilt over." Then stop, and the building starts to shake. You can feel the vibration on the ground, like an earth tremor. And the next thing I know, the building starts to implode, floor after floor. Boom, 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 boom. Because we were hiding at the backside of the church took the blunt force of everything that went. So every step of the way, the Lord was protecting us. The building imploded. And all the people who were roped around full blocks away, they were screaming, they were cursing, they were yelling, and the not so able are getting trampled. As the building imploded, a large vacuum was created, and all the smoke from the cross streets and the air, it was dragging it towards the core. So all these people were just enveloped in this giant tsunami of smoke. My God, what is happening? And my guardian angel, Brian, who just brought me out of Sodom and Gomorrah, he is gone. But I can hear the scream, "Stanley." And I'm screaming, "Brian," but I can't see the man. And in my heart, they're bombing the financial area. And I gotta go save Jenny. Jenny had worked with the New York Stock Exchange at the time, but she didn't work on the trading floor. Her building was hidden over the Brooklyn Bridge, and they did all the software update. So she worked for their legal department. I never visited her because of security reasons. I didn't want to go through three sets of metal detector. So all I know is the building number. and I'm looking for something, for somebody. I don't know what I'm looking for, but I got to go save Jenny. And I saw a man driving a 4x4 pickup truck on top of the sidewalks. I ran alongside, yanked the door open. One word from you, you're dead, drive. The man looks at me, got scared. He reached on top of the dashboard, pick up a white box of cigarettes. He says, "Here, man, have a smoke." I said, "No, I had enough smoke for one day." He looked at me, smiled. "Where to? Brooklyn Bridge Drive." He's driving now like a maniac. He reaches the ramp. There are too many people. He can't go over the bridge. I yanked the door open. "Thank you." Jumped out and I'm gone. I'm running. "Get out of my way. Get out of my way. Get out of my way." And I bump into this big guy. I'm like, oh boy, now he's going to kill me. The guy turned around, looks at me into compassion. "What happened?" "I just got out of the building." "Oh my gosh, you need the hospital badly." Every person who I met is telling me the same thing. And to me, I'm fine. I'm high in adrenaline. The man said, "My name is Albert de Leon. I'm a senior counsel for French Bank. Ask me for anything." I said, "All I want you to do is to show me where 2 Metro Tech is." The guy says, "I live right behind that building." "What is that chance? 30,000 people on top of the bridge. One man you bump into know exactly where you got to go." The guy said, "I was in Vietnam." I says, "All right, help me." "But I'm not going." "What do you mean you're not going?" So I sat down on top of the bridge and people are screaming, jumping, and running all over. I said, "Because they're hot wired this bridge and everybody's going to die." So the guy looks at me now like, "I got to hear this." "No, you can hear the sound, but you can't see anything." So the guy says, "I want you to listen well and tell me what are you hearing." He thought I was crazy. "But you can hear the jet fighters." I said, "That is Uncle Sam taking care of business." He said, "Well, come on, let's go." I got up and we start to run, and I'm hobbling, running, hobbling. And we reached the ramp of the building where my wife works. And when we got there, the security guard looks at me and says, "Oh no, you're not coming in here." He just looked at me, profiled me. I'm covered in blood, black and blue, 90% of my body. And the guy says, "Oh no." And the security guard surrounded Albert and I. And Albert is making so much noise. "All we want is Jennifer from the legal department." And all I remember, I saw the guard stick coming down. And I took a karate stand. The next thing I know, the guy just flew. And Albert says, "You killed a man." I says, No. He's gonna live." The guy tumbled on top of some desks and he just got up back. And the corner of my eyes, I saw this guy running coming towards us. He ran and came. And he says, "What are you guys are doing? Stan is a good guy." Pushed the security people one side. And I recognized Greg. Greg says, "Stan, we don't have the facility here to take care of you." But he told a nurse who was there in the lobby area and the security people, he says, "Give this man anything he wants, but make him well. Stan, we have an emergency general counsel meeting. I gotta go." And the man unbuttoned his white shirt. "Take my shirt." The nurse came instead and gave me one of her jackets. If this Bible was to be rewritten in modern times, this man would have been the Good Samaritan. He was gone. And the nurse looks at me again and says, "Stan, we don't have the facility here in this lobby area to take care of you. You need the hospital." I said, "No. If only I can hear Jenny's voice. If only I can hear that our 2 girls are fine. I'll be okay. Give me a phone. I can't use the right hand, so I'm playing with the numbers. I can't remember a number for the love of God. I can't remember it. The number pops into my head, and here's Jenny on the other line. "Who is this?" "It's me, Stan. What are you doing this for? Please don't do this to me. My husband is dead." "No, the Lord took care of me. I'm coming home to you, girl. Please don't do this to me." Men, when you have heard these words and you're still alive to hear them, you would never be the same again. I hung up the phone. I said, I'll see you girls home. And the nurse says, "Stan, I have a sandwich, a bottle of water, and an apple. I want you to have it." "No." And she was crying. "No, please take it." I says, "Okay, give me the water." I stuck the water in my pocket. She says, "I can't send you home with a cab because they shut down the parkway. But I'm gonna walk you down and you're gonna get the train." "Lady, why would you take me to the train if they shut down the system?" But I followed her and she went. Stood there. I'm waiting on the A train to come back. Nothing. About 7 minutes later, an A train pulled up in the platform. I can't explain this short of a miracle. They shut down the system, but a train came for yours truly. The doors opened up right in front of me where I was standing on the platform, and I stepped in. And as soon as I got into that train, I stepped in. The door closed. Nobody came out from the train, nobody went back in. I was like the conductor. And the lady couldn't believe what she was seeing. She had her hand in her mouth like this, like she was in shock. And as the train pulled out of the platform, she was running alongside, waving me goodbye. And I was gone. I got out of the stop where I was parked. When I got out there, I'm walking, coming towards the car. I saw a man. The man recognized me. I couldn't figure at first who this man was. But he was the manager of an Allstate insurance company. He had his office on Liberty Avenue. He had some food in a bag, in a styrofoam box, and a bottle of water. He says, "Stan, I want you to have this. You're in bad shape, man. You need food and you need the hospital." I said, "No, man, thank you. Look, all I need is to get home and make sure Jenny and the girls are well." Got to the car, realize I can't put on my seatbelt, I'm swollen. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, today I'm gonna get a ticket." Who thinks about a ticket on a day like that? I never had a ticket, so I'm scared of getting one. I try to buckle on the seatbelt, and I drive like a robot, and I pulled up in front of the driveway. When I got there, all the neighbors ran out, hugged me, kissed me. Chi-Chi and Toots, Gigi and Toots and Carolyn and everybody kissing me, hugging me. "Thank God you're safe, Stan." And I walk up the stairs, and there was Jenny standing up with these two precious children, holding on to Caitlin on her right hand and Stephanie on the left. I reached for Caitlin, our younger daughter. She was 4. And the child starts screaming, "Please don't touch me. You're not my daddy." She couldn't recognize me. "Please don't touch me." And she's hiding behind my wife. And I reached for Stephanie. Stephanie was 8 and a half. She had a sandwich and still had the butter knife in one hand. And when I hugged this child, she said something that I would go to the grave remembering. She says, "Dad, if you didn't come home, I was going to kill myself." When that child said what she said, after all that I went through, it didn't mean anything. I just remember I hugged Jenny and the girls, and I said, "Lord, thank you." Because that morning I left home with a prayer in my heart. Now is the time to give thanks. When all I remember, I'm mumbling to her, "Please don't take me to the hospital. They would never send me home. Take me to Dr. Grant, and he would know what to do." And next thing I know, I'm lying down, and a doctor is leaning over me. And he is talking to somebody on the phone, his brother. The doctor didn't know that his brother was my tax accountant. And he's telling this man, "This person here who I have here claims his name is Stanley Premnett, nearly died, got out of the World Trade Center." I can hear the conversation. But this man lost his mind. It would take a month, a day, a week, a year. Eventually, he may snap out, but there's no guarantee. And I want to reach up and grab his neck and pop him and says, "Look, I can hear you," but I couldn't respond in speech. I lost everything. Everything was gone. Everything was taken away from me. And I don't know what day it was. And all I remember, I couldn't sleep, and even the medication he gave me, my adrenaline was overriding the medication. I can't sleep. And I want to know what a strange woman is doing in this house. What are these children running around here? I couldn't recognize them. And Jenny would leave a little notepad and a pen and a bottle of water and a telephone there. And I'm watching TV and it all unfolded as I'm watching the scenes over and over. It looks like a nightmare that I had. Couldn't remember anything. And all I can remember, the pastor is preaching again, and he's saying all the answers to life is in the Bible. 911 is an emergency number. And the newscaster is saying September is spelled with nine letters. Oh, that's all I can remember. And I said, Jen, give me my Bible. So I had an old King James. I still have it, an old King James version of the Bible with a zipper around. And she stood up and she's stretching, giving me this Bible. I'm like, why are you standing so far? So she gave me the Bible. The Bible was so old, all the pages are falling apart. And I don't know where I'm looking or what I'm looking for. All I wanted to see the answers to life, 911. I'm flipping the pages, and all I saw was 911, Psalm 91, verse 1. And I'm reading, He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Oh my God, this is good stuff. And reading on, thousands shall fall at the right hand and no harm shall come to thee. Wow. I'm reading on. And he shall call, and I will hear, I would answer, and I would be with him in time of trouble. Oh my gosh, this is good. And I'm reading on, and with long life shall I satisfy him and show him my salvation. I snapped out. I can recognize people and faces and everything. And like another magic slash miracle, it happened. I snapped out and I'm back to my old self. And all I can remember again, the health coverage that we had, they wanted me to go counseling. And I went first to counseling. The lady says, Tell me why you're here. You can sit down, you can stand up, you can lie down, just be comfortable. And by the time I was done, she was in tears. And I'm like, what is wrong with this picture? She's supposed to be the strong one here. And I ended up telling her about the saving grace of God. And to my surprise, she accepted Christ. And I knew in my heart what my calling is. The Lord had to put me through that entire process to know my calling is to tell the good news, to go and tell it. So I became the tenth leper. And I live because of the saving grace of God, who reached down in his mercies and handpicked me and let me live for reasons I don't understand. Why some people die, some people live. But all I can say is, Lord, thank you for that grace. And I lived. And I never stopped. But the story did not end. The story did not end then. I start having nightmares. I can't sleep. I'm screaming. I can dream. And in this dream, I can hear. I'm not seeing the person. This is what I can hear. You're not doing what you're supposed to do. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I can feel in that dream That nightmare I'm having, that all my meat and skin and flesh is falling off the bones. And I'm getting up hyperventilating. Oh my God. Oh my God. And she would ask me, Stan, what happened? You're having the same dream again. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing that I'm not supposed to do. I don't gamble. I don't have another girlfriend. I don't go to parties. I don't dance. I don't do anything. All I do is I go to church. I found myself in Springfield, Missouri, in Park Christ Assembly of God. Pastor Scott was there, Scott Temple. And after the service, he says, Stan, what happened? I said, I don't know, but I can't sleep well. And he said, do you mind if I pray with you? I said, not at all. And it was not any fancy prayer. He did not even touch me, he just put his hand over my head like this. And he prayed a simple prayer. And all I remembered, it was like somebody who flipped a switch in my head. I got home, and Jenny says, start from scratch. Like she would ask me. And before I started, she says, was there a good harvest of souls? I said, yeah. Oh gosh, you have to see this. So many people surrendered their life to the Lord, and we would just rejoice. Now, sometimes it's 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I gotta get back up 6 o'clock to go back to work. So I would travel on weekends, come back, and I would come back on the Sunday night. Monday morning, I gotta go to work. And for years, I did that. So he said, Stan, so where does that leave us? What am I supposed to do? I said, I'll be a pastor. I'll become a pastor. He says, no. All my life, my father was our pastor. So I got married to the preacher man's daughter. And he said, she says, I saw the struggles that my mother went through and my father. In the heart of the night, they get up and they leave us and they're gone to witness to somebody, to counsel them, to comfort them. I don't want that for our children. I says, no, you got married to me. And I says, no, you're going to write a check and give me, and I'm going to become a pastor. She says, but your busy schedule, you would never get time to study. I says, try me. In 1 year, I studied, and the first day I sent that check to Berean Bible College and Global University and all that good stuff, I never had back that 9 beer until now. Nothing. Never had it back. And I knew in my heart, this is what God wants out of me. So I became a pastor and I start traveling. Some 18, 19 years pass. I got sick. The doctor says, you can't come in here. It's first phase of COVID. And then the next thing I know, I can't walk. I got so sick that I'd lost 25 pounds in 1 month. I said, Stan, I think this is it. You're going to die. Got up after 1 month. Now I can go see the doctor. I went to the doctor. It's on 9/11/2020, exact date 9/11. The day I thought I was going to die, I'd live just to be told on that day that I have leukemia. I had come down with pneumonia in both lung and it had a left scar tissue. And doing the blood work and everything, they discovered that I had leukemia. Six months after that, I came down with skin cancer. They cut my jaw under here, scooped out all the meat, stitched me back from inside out. I'm surviving. Last month, I told my wife, I said, I have to go to South Africa on a speaking engagement. And when I came back, she says, you look tired. What do you want? I said, let's go to Europe. So we were in Amsterdam and Brussels and in Paris and London, and when we came back, she says, why don't you go for a physical? I said, okay. When I went, the doctor says, I don't like what I'm seeing. And they start doing a series of tests, and then he says, I don't think you should go home. I said, no, I got to go home and set the house in order. And 1 week after that, I was under the knife for 6.5 hours. I had a quadruple bypass. The four main arteries were 70, 80, 90, and 100% clogged. So I had the quadruple bypass, recouped well, and here I am asking the question over and over, how many times do you kill one man? But unless that day comes when the Lord says, I'm ready, and that page is torn in that big book up there, I'm not going. So I'm living by grace. But I have just one request. If you never hear back from me, never see me again, every time before you go to the Lord and you pray, just bring me up before the Lord in prayer. Lord, bless this man. Help him. I need all the prayer I can get. So if there's something like living by grace, I'm that person. Just want to say thank you for listening.
Thank you for sharing, and thank you for spending time with us today. And I'm proud to call you a friend and say I love you. And you're just a true mentor and a leader and an inspiration and a world changer. Do you mind if I ask some questions before we let you go? Because we have you for a few
Go
minutes.
ahead, my friend. Go ahead.
All right,
Ask me
brother.
that question that nobody never asked me.
I don't know. I feel like you've been asked a lot. Well, I have everyone here, definitely check out his book, Plucked from Fire. And I really hope that you write another book, The Nine Lives of Stanley Primnath. I think that that would be fitting. And anyone here on the call, feel free to message your questions here for Stan. So, Stan, can you maybe give some perspective on what advice would you give to someone who's experiencing or going through some sort of trauma or struggles and how they can move forward?
I had gone through just about everything that the devil would throw. The devil threw the entire kitchen at me, from the stove to the fridge and the sink, even the pots and pans. I may never understand why you're going through what you're going through, but what I can tell you is there is grace. Leave your cares upon the Lord, lean upon Him, for He cares for you. There isn't anything Stanley Primnath can do for you, there's nothing that I can help you with. I can only pray for you, but it's only by the saving grace of God you're able to rally through. He's going to provide that hedge of protection around about you where the devil cannot come close to you. His protective hand would always be on you. And lean your care upon him. He cares for you. All I can say is God is the only one who can help you. He is your protector. He is your shelter. He is your all in all. I learned that the hard way. But when I started to lean my cares upon him, he took care of all my shortcomings. I thought many, many times that I would never make it. I would never see our children marry. Caitlin got married in 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, she got married. Stephanie is married with two children of her own. And I consider myself blessed. I may not be a rich man by a lot of standards, but I can tell you I'm rich in grace. Not because he gave me, it was not something to give. He blessed me with it. He reached down, pulled me out of that pit, that towering inferno. He didn't have to do it. He chose to do it. God is sovereign. He chooses whom he chooses for reasons I don't know, and he let me live. And because of this, I'm proud to know that I can be called a child of the Most High.
That's beautiful. And it seems like you're being used now, like your experiences, they have that in Hebrew, hineni. Use me. Here I am, use me. And can you maybe touch on in what ways gratitude can help people face adversity?
There's a lot of gratitude you can use when you're going through adversity. The first thing is When you're going through what you're going through, you don't know what to do, who to turn to. But why don't you stop in your tracks and say, Lord, I've tried all the doctors. I've chewed up my money, like the woman with the issue of blood. And there's no hope. But just reach out to that hem of the garment. Just give God thanks, regardless of, in spite of it all. Say, Lord, thank you. Lord, only you can help me. I don't have the reserves. I don't have the strength. The doctor asked me a very simple question when I went to Sloan Kettering. What are you doing that I am not doing? All the patients who came here are going through chemotherapy and radiation and transfusion and staying 5 years, 5 years. You're not. Well, I told it to my friend. Who's your friend? Adonai. Well, that name is too sacred for us to call. Yahweh himself? No. Well, I can call my friend by his first name, his middle name, or his last name. I am his friend. I can call him. And if I lean on him, I can ask my friend a favor and I can call him by any name. He's still my friend. So the people who are going through adversity and going through all these problems, leave it at the foot of the cross. Let him pick you up. Let the Lord pick you up and let you stand on your feet. It's only by his grace you would be able to carry it through. Only by his strength you would be able to do it. And even if he doesn't, even if he chooses not to, he is sovereign. You would be reconciled with your loved ones on that day. So if he chooses not to, for reasons only he knows, I'm thankful. And if the Lord says today is your glory day, Lord, I am ready. So give your heart to the Lord. Make right with the Spirit. Be ready and tell of the good news. That's my advice to you, my friends.
Right, so much positivity and love, and there's so much faith, and it's just absolutely beautiful. We'll go with a few more student questions and let you go. We know we kept you an hour. And guys, if you want to see more of him, you're being interviewed tomorrow on Newsmax, is it?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
Yes.
so check that out. So I want to know, as someone who's spoken around the world, what similarities do you see in how people respond across cultures to your story?
Every place that I've gone, I mean, just about every place that I've traveled and visited and gone to and spoke, every person responded in a positive way. Every person who saw knew that it was something of God. It had to be a miracle. I got a call from Melbourne, Australia, and I was doing a podcast with this guy. And towards the end, he told me something that not that I was surprised about. He said, I want to make God my priority, and I want to make church going my number one. And after the program, he sent me a little text to say he and his wife and his two children would be going to church. They became believers after I was finished. So those are some of the feedbacks that I get. A guy called me up from Switzerland about 6 months ago and says, Stan, yeah, is this Stanley Premnit? Yeah. And he told me this story, and this is what he said. He said, I was watching the interview, your interview on TV last year on 9/11. And I said, okay. So he was at the right place at the right time. So I turned off the TV and I went to another channel, and they were showing you again. Same thing happened. He turned off the TV, went to another channel, and he stopped now at Nat Geo. National Geographic, he's watching and he's hearing a testimony and the interview that I did. And he said, well, let me listen. So he listened and he's got convicted in his spirit. And he said, he was always gay. And the local church that he went to didn't accept him because of a lifestyle. So he stopped going. And he said, after he heard that message that I gave and that interview that I shared, he went back to the church and decided that he wanted to live straight, clean up his act, and he met a wonderful woman in church and he got married. and they're expecting their first baby. And he says, Stan, thank you. Had it not been for you, I would not have been who I am today. I would never have met this one person that I so love, and we wouldn't have had a child. If ever you come to Switzerland, Stan, our home would be your place if you would stay. Another person called me from Mozambique and says, Stan, I know what I have to do. I have to go to the tribes and the villages, and I have to tell them about the God that saved you. I was in South Africa, and some of the folks says, well, you have to come here and speak on the Sunday night because we don't have a big crowd, maybe 75. And maybe in case you say something that we're not too familiar with, it's okay. And I didn't say anything. And the Sunday night, and they said, remember, 30 minutes only. And I said, how about 45 minutes? So we went in the church and everything went well. And quarter to six comes. I'm speaking at 6 o'clock. There was about 150, 10 to six. There was about 500 and about 750. And they ran out of seats. And I told the people, I said, well, why don't you bring more chairs? So they brought in some more chairs and it started to rain. So after the 30 minutes, even though I wanted to go or they wanted me to go, they said, no, stay on. And it rained so hard that even though they wanted to dismiss, they couldn't have. So I had a full 45 minutes and a whole ton of people there surrendered their life to the Lord to a point where nobody wanted to go home and it's 10 o'clock in the night. And the local restaurant says, we will serve all the tea, coffee, and potato pancakes for free. And so we had a little party after the service, and the people are like, all right, we got to hear a little more of you. So they give me a microphone, give Jenny a microphone, and everybody was asking questions. And we were doing four speaking engagements per day. So that is how receptive people would be every place that I've gone, telling the good news. And I know in my heart, I was saved for such a time as this.
Amazing. That's amazing. We have a few more student questions, then we'll let you go. Miss Luna's class here in Nevada, if you guys want to unmute to ask. I know you guys had a couple of questions. They might be having microphone issues, but one of the students wanted to know what is your favorite Bible verse? One of the kids sent that in.
Favorite Bible verse? He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Psalm 91, verse 1 became my favorite verse. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. My favorite verse.
That's beautiful. Another kid wanted to know, as a pastor, what advice do you have for everyone in general when it comes to being a better person in the eyes of God?
I believe with all my heart that if I do well in front of God's sight, I do the right thing, go to church, pay my tithes, give my offering, be a helper in God's house, be a friend to the people who needs a friend, be a cane to the person who is blind, a mouthpiece to the one who can't speak, an ear to the deaf, that I believe that on that day when I stand before the Lord, He's going to tell me, welcome, good and faithful servant. He would not ask me how many people I raised from the dead, but He would ask me, I believe with all my heart, that when my child hunger and thirst, did you give them something to eat or to drink? I believe He would ask me that. So I believe with all my heart, if I live a life that is pleasing to God, He would be proud of me and I would inherit that which He's gone to prepare for me.
Brilliant. Well said. So we'll let you go after this. I always ask this of all of our guests. What advice would you have for this generation, next generation, kind of coming up when it comes to, you touched on persevering through adversity, but what kind of like general advice would you have for these kids?
The advice I would have for the kids, I would tell them, make God your priority. Church, you're number one. And don't go to church because your parents send you. Go because of the love of God. And if you live a life that is pleasing to God, He is going to make Everything, your rough path, smooth. He's going to take good care of you. So, bottom line is, live a life that is pleasing to God. Lean your cares upon Him because He cares for you. We serve a living, loving God, a God who is full of mercies and rich in love. So make Christ your number one priority.
Well said. Well said. So before I let you go, I'm going to allow everyone to unmute, and can we all collectively, can we say thank you to Stanley for taking the last hour to share his story of survival and share his account of September 11th and sharing his testimony. We can't thank you enough, Stanley. And you know, I love you, man, and just keep on keeping on.
Amen. And before you know it, I'll call you one day and says, let us write that second book.
Yep, there you go. Let me know. I'm
Yes,
here.
sir.
Thank you, sir.
You stay
Thank
blessed.
you so
I'm only
much,
chilling.
Ben.
Thank
Yes, sir.
you.
Bye.
All right. Stay blessed, people.
Thank you.